From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, the Night of the Weird. I'm looking forward to that. We need a little break tonight after what I have to tell you for the first couple hours. Here's what's happening. The Liberian authorities say that they will prosecute the man diagnosed with Ebola here in the United States. They are accusing him of lying over his contact with an infected relative. When he left the country last month, Liberian national Thomas Eric Duncan filed in a questionnaire saying that none of his relatives were sick. But Liberia's assistant health minister said that he had taken a sick relative to a clinic in a wheelbarrow. Duncan is in serious condition in a Dallas hospital. He is the first case of Ebola to be diagnosed on U.S. soil, where as many now as 100 people are being checked for exposure to Ebola. And so far, more than 3,330 people have died in the Ebola outbreak in four West African countries. And more than a week after the Liberian man fell ill with Ebola, and 4 days after he was placed in isolation at a hospital in Dallas, the apartment where he was staying with four other people had not been cleaned, and the sheets and dirty towels that he used while being sick remained in the home. How'd you like to live next to that apartment? And an American freelance cameraman working for NBC News in Liberia has now tested positive for the Ebola virus and will be flown back to the United States for treatment. As we have talked with since the beginning of this outbreak, Gary Ridenour, expert and also the author of Pandemic. Gary, I got to ask you first and foremost, is this a real scare or is it blown out of proportion?
I think this is a real scare, and I think it's being understated by the CDC, which I now call the Center for Disaster Creation. Dr. Nancy Snyderman and three others are still in Africa waiting to be picked up to be brought back to the United States for 21 days of isolation. So we've got five evacuated to the U.S., one snuck in, and then we have four more Americans on the way to the U.S. to be watched. While Louise, the partner of Thomas Duncan, the man with the who has Ebola, is being forced to stay in her apartment with her 13-year-old son and two nephews. The sad thing is the CDC sent a company called the Cleaning Guys from Dallas, Texas, to go in and clean the apartment. These are untrained personnel.
And it's probably a little late, isn't it?
Yeah, this is 1814. Lock up a black family and watch them.
And what about the plane that he was on? I mean, shouldn't that plane be disinfected?
Oh, it should be tracked down and cleaned from one end to the other. That's all there is to it.
Well, Gary, we were talking last week at how this could multiply like rabbits. And do you see that? I mean, here we are. We've got one case here. We've got people panicking. We might have 100 people that may have been exposed to it. Doesn't mean they've got Ebola. But my concern is that under every nook and cranny, are people going to say, oh, my God, this person's got Ebola. Somebody sneezes and they run away.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of hysteria. And talking to my patients, my God, 40% of them don't even know that there's something going on with Ebola or there's a problem in Africa. Hmm. And they don't know.
Well.
And it's awful. It's
something else. I'll tell you what, Gary, I'm going to be talking with Craig Hewlett in a moment about this and some other issues and get his take on this too. Thanks. Fears of the enterovirus and what it could mean for children are spreading nearly as quickly as the respiratory illness itself, with now more than 500 cases confirmed across 42 states. Four people who were infected with the virus since early August have died. Have you ever lived in a time period like this where everything just seems to be upside down? J.P. Morgan Chase, the biggest U.S. bank, said a previously disclosed data breach of its systems affected 76 million households and 7 million small businesses. Boy, if you live in California, listen to this. A growing number of communities in central and northern California could end up without water in 60 days due to the Golden State's prolonged drought. There are now a dozen of small communities in central and northern California relying on a single source of water, which has the Water Resources Board concerned that they will not have any at all in 2 months' time. Now, what does that all mean? Let's check in with Howard Bloom on this one. Howard, this could be panic.
Well, it could be panic. In Tulare County, it's actually a little worse, and people do not have drinking water. They do not have tap water. They are not able to flush their toilets. They are supplied by emergency services with water. But one thing you've got to realize is, George, this is a planet of climate catastrophe.
Yes.
And it always has been. 55 million years ago, Antarctica, the South Pole, was a tropical paradise. The carbon dioxide level in the atmosphere was three times what it is today. There were dinosaurs living in lush tropical forests. There have been periods on this planet where we've had the opposite, snowball Earth, much worse than the ice ages through which we humans lived, you know, most of our lives as humans. We've been in an ice age. This is this little tiny period of 12,000 years that we live in now is one of the longest periods of climate stability in the history of this planet. So our job as humans is to recognize this is a planet of massive climate change, and it is our job, if we want to stabilize the climate to be the way it was before the Industrial Revolution, hey, recognize that as a human goal, and then use technologies the same way we once upon a time used another climate stabilization technology, the roof and the wall. We managed to stabilize the climate in little tiny buildings. Now it's time for us to stabilize the climate all around the globe.
Howard, at what time, at what point does California start doing desalinization and start pumping some ocean water into the state?
That's a big question. There's already water being pumped into the interior from the San Francisco Bay, but there are over 32 desalination plants in Saudi Arabia. Israel has four of them. They are expensive to run. But remember, there are two guys who suckered me into something. One is Buzz Aldrin, the second man on the moon, and the other is Dr. APJ Kalam, the 11th president of India. What they suckered me into was harvesting solar energy in space and transmitting it down to Earth. And if we did that, we could power all the desalination plants we wanted, and we would no longer have water crises.
Howard Bloom, thank you so much. General Motors, well, they say they're recalling 117,000 newer vehicles in North America because of a possible manufacturing defect, which could cause an electrical short and an increase the risk of a crash. Isn't that great to know? The recall is GM's 69th this year, covering more than 29 million vehicles. Affected are certain versions of the 2013-14 Chevy Tahoes and Suburbans, Yukons, Escalades, CTS sedans. Well, if you're in the recall, they'll notify you. Listen to this bizarre story. An angry lynch mob is after a 31-year-old Indonesian woman who gave birth to a gecko lizard after an 8-month pregnancy. I'm not kidding. India Today reports that the group believes that she practiced witchcraft after a midwife delivered a lizard in the remote village. Now, some people are saying this is biologically nonsense, but they still think she's a witch. Up next, Craig Hewlett joins us. We're going to talk about current events, Ebola, and just about everything else we can think of next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. 2 hours with Craig Hewlett tonight. Craig, of course, speechwriter, special assistant for special projects to Congressman, then the retired Jack Metcalf. He has been a consultant for federal law enforcement. He remains an analyst and consultant in various areas of geopolitical, business, security issues. He is a no-nonsense kind of guy. That's one of the reasons I like him. And we're going to talk about a lot of issues here. Craig, I can't think of a better time to have you on the program.
Sad, but I wish that weren't true, but you're correct. There's an awful lot going on, and it is starting to feel a little surreal, but Someone once said we should hope to live in interesting times.
We sure do. Look, two things have happened that I want to get your reaction on over the past week. The Liberian newspaper claims that we created this Ebola virus. And then just a day or so ago, Louis Farrakhan, and you got to listen to what he says with a grain of salt, but he says we created this too. I want to get your take on this.
Well, I was confronted by a caller on during another talk show, and he suggested that he had proof that the United States government patented the victim's blood of Ebola fever, and that we control that as a resource. I went ahead and I looked into it. I had him email me the evidence that he had, and all he actually had was a patent number for the CDC applying for a patent for the vaccine on Ebola fever, and only one strain of Ebola fever, and that was one of the strains that the CDC was working on. There's actually a lot of vaccines being worked on, but the Liberian paper, it was written by a professor at a university of psychiatry with very, very weak credentials, and it was kind of a rant. I wouldn't call it an article he wrote for the Liberian newspaper, and it was taken seriously by a lot of conspiracy theorists that this is a man-made disease. I spent way too much time, okay? I did, George. Had to. I spent a lot of time, wasted a lot of time to prove that these things are not true. Of course, it's not a man-made disease.
And if they were true, Craig, you'd be one of the first to tell us. I know you.
There's no question. There would be nothing in the world that would stop me. I would get on a plane and fly to your home and sit on your front porch. Look, I take all of these kinds of things very seriously. We don't need to have magic and mysticism, and we don't need to be burning people at the stake for giving birth to lizards either.
That's right.
But, you know, the problem is with Ebola is I published it. It's in a paper if you want it. You can contact my office. It's one of the lead articles. Der Spiegel interviewed the discoverer, Peter Piot, I believe it's pronounced, P-I-O-T. He's from Belgium. He's the one that discovered Ebola. And the whole process of his discovery of it is it would make for a hell of a movie.
Oh, my God, yeah.
It was absolutely amazing. They had none of the skill sets. They had none of the protection equipment that they've got today. He actually dropped one of the vials, and it broke on his boot. They thought they were dealing with hemorrhagic fever.
It's similar.
2 years later, they discovered this is a whole new thing. They only really discovered it and gave it its name, Ebola, when they got new microscopes, ion microscopes, that allowed them to see further into the parasite itself. And once they discovered it, that's the beginning of the process. And yes, there are people out there patenting it. But the worst thing I've discovered in all the research trying to refute the nonsense, this is a man-made disease to destroy either the black population or to depopulate areas of the planet. You know, nothing like that's going on. It's bad enough that it really does exist in and of itself. But the worst thing I discovered is when reporters did go out and start interviewing pharmaceuticals, and they asked them, do you have a vaccine for Ebola fever? They said, yes. And they said, okay, are we going to be using it in Africa? And they said, well, nobody has shown any interest in it from a business standpoint.
That's bizarre.
What they're saying is what Archer Daniels Midland said about when Dwayne Andreas was interviewed on 2020, you're admitting you produce enough food to feed the world. Dwayne Andreas, of course we do. Then why are there people starving in Africa? He said, they have no money.
To buy the food. That's right.
And that's what the pharmaceuticals meant when they said there has been no business interest in producing the vaccine for Ebola fever on any scale. So, therefore, we have not done so.
Well, and here's where the conspiratorial mind takes over, Craig, because all of a sudden, let's assume these Ebola outbreaks really start to fester. And we have one, then 10, then 20, then 40, then 2 million. And then all of a sudden, out pops the vaccine, and they're making $200 a shot.
Exactly. But that's the way the Western, and don't get me wrong, I'm not, when I say capitalism, I don't mean capitalism way the progressive left uses the language. The capitalism I'm talking about is the old term that Lenin first coined in his biography. He referred to it as monopoly financial capitalism. He didn't designate any group or people, country or place responsible. He was talking about the economic evolution of a thing called capitalism. Now, free market capitalism, something Craig Hewlett practices every day of his life since before he was in the Army and illegally while I was in the Army, free market capitalism would solve a lot of these problems. But we're talking about predatory monopoly capitalism, and that is exactly what I've just described. They want to own that patent. They want to own the vaccine.
There you
and
go.
Only introduce it when it's a crisis, because they can maximize profit as a monopoly, issuing that vaccine through a government agency like the World Health Organization and the CDC. That is hideous.
Yep. They don't want to give it to this poor sap in Dallas because, you know, they may cure the guy, and then
exactly.
It goes away.
They're not about to do it until the bottom line proves to be viable.
Do you think they've all taken the vaccine themselves?
Well, when we say they, that the they that you'd be describing don't necessarily live in America. They have homes in Vienna and Istanbul. They have Dhaka in the Black Sea. They're the gold-collar workers of the world. The monopoly corporate people I'm talking about have no allegiance to any country, nation, state, or people. It's about money, their shareholders, and their partners, the other corporations that they're working their monopoly goals out with. So this practice is pretty common in every area. It's just hideous that they would apply the same principles of monopoly capitalism or predatory capitalism, like from the airline industry, the defense contractors, or making automobiles and light bulbs, that they would apply it to a vaccine on a disease that could kill 3, 5, 10 million people.
Amazing. And what's so bizarre, and we're going to talk about ISIS after the break, Craig, but it seems like that story has kind of been swept under the carpet while we're running around panicking about this Ebola story.
And I think that makes the pharmaceutical corporate boardroom smile.
They're waiting. They're just waiting.
Yep.
Probably adding up how much they could make if a million people got this and everything else. And what they want, I think, is for people to line up by the millions to get the vaccine.
Or maybe be told by their government that they must line up.
That they must have it.
Take the vaccine.
That's a good point.
And, of course, we won't know what the side effects of the vaccine is because it's never been introduced in large quantities into the population.
There's been talk that the CDC is botching this in a big way. What do you think?
Well, we said the same thing about the intelligence community, the New York Fire Department's response to 9/11. You know, the truth is, This isn't my words either. It's the researcher that discovered the Ebola fever. He said in the interview with Der Spiegel, this one disease, this peculiar disease that we call Ebola, he said, it is what we describe in other areas of concern as a perfect storm.
I believe that.
To take it serious. There's nothing like it. They've never dealt with anything like it before on a large scale. They should have been prepared a long time ago, preparing for dealing with it, because they had to know just on a natural progression, on a simple algorithm, it's going to happen sooner or later. But the pharmaceuticals said, yeah, well, when it looks like it's going to happen, call us and we'll see about making that vaccine in large quantities. But then, of course, during a crisis, they could charge anything they want.
Would you panic if you were just talking, standing next to someone who had Ebola?
No. Right. Unless the one thing he did point out is for it to actually leap into the perfect storm, it could go airborne.
If it goes airborne, then we have a problem.
We have a real problem. Right now, it is only transmittable through saliva, blood, vomit, diarrhea. That you have to be in pretty close proximity to it. But he did say, you know, nobody saw hemorrhagic fever going airborne either.
That's a good point. This sounds like end times, doesn't it?
You know, I hate that, don't you? Because, you know, that whole birth pang thing, but maybe I'm getting old, but it's starting to feel like
it. Does. Craig, stay with us. We're going to come back and talk more about this and ISIS and what the heck is going on this planet. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And we'll take phone calls with Craig Hewlett next hour. I've still got more to talk with him when we come back. And welcome back. Craig Hewlett with us. His website, Craig B. Hewlett, H-U-L-E-T, is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Craig, before we jump in on ISIS, final word on Ebola?
Well, I do believe that in the United States, the CDC has the ability to contain it should it start taking off in the United States. I do believe that at this time. But I do have some reservations about how they are handling the case in Dallas. The previous guy you were talking to during the interview, I think, does make a pretty good point. They're kind of acting as though it's not as serious as it is. And I think it is extremely serious.
I do, too.
Especially given the fact that of what I just said about the pharmaceuticals. They're not prepared to do anything until it's in their financial interest. And, you know, the government of the United States can be pretty bloody ruthless, like the city of Detroit, and in foreign affairs, what we do to other countries if they don't get in line. And it seems a little odd to me that the United States government and the CDC isn't leaning on the pharmaceuticals a little harder to resolve this vaccine question.
Well, and the amount of money we spend, I mean, the hundreds of millions of dollars that Jerry Lewis has raised for muscular dystrophy, for example, in the past. So we still don't have a cure for that. I mean, it's like they're just not doing anything.
Well, I do believe there's a reason why they're not doing very much at all, and that's because I don't believe the government of the United States and the corporate structure backing that government has the same interest in the domestic population of America as it did 50 years ago, even 20 years ago. I think they're lacking in compassion or empathy towards the American people because they themselves have become the global citizens that they harp on all the time, the globalization process, the need for interdependent relationships in foreign affairs, the economics-driven side of our government, NAFTA, GATT, the World Trade Organization. Those things seem to be taking over anyone that has an interest in what happens domestically. So if Ebola gets out of hand and it kills a couple of million people in America, I don't see the government doing much more than shrugging right now. And then at the last minute, maybe they'll pull the plug and do something right and fix the problem. But I don't believe our government is the same government we used to think of it as any longer. I think the cynicism runs so deeply now, the bribery, the payoff, the them versus us mentality, I think exists in reality. I don't think it's a fiction. I think it's real.
It is real.
People inside the Beltway truly are a them, and there's the U.S., us.
ISIS. They seem to be getting close to Baghdad. If we're bombing, why can't we just knock them out? They're in a desert.
Well, you know what? The silliest thing about ISIS is, you know, when I first saw it, I immediately started talking to people I know in the national security, in international affairs side, and everybody was of the same conclusion. You know, the thing we're calling ISIS never actually exists until you give it a name.
That's right.
It's a group of people out there, and they're doing something. But until you give it a name, you know, so the American people can have an anchor man say, you look at these guys on the TV screen, that's ISIS. But then it became ISIL. Then it just became IS. Like, what is? Like, I'm from New Jersey all of a sudden. So I don't believe it, and I think there's so much overwhelming evidence that ISIS was a group of individuals, anti-Syrian, anti-Assad individuals, by and large, in the beginning. The CIA Special Forces trained them in Jordan. It was funded by Saudi Arabia, Qatar. The Mossad was involved in training them. I think maybe our CIA actually had the illusion that we might be training somebody that will be useful. We all the time use our enemies to fight our other enemies. Mm-hmm. We've been doing it for 50 years. That's not really new. Bin Laden, a prime example. But if I say ISIS doesn't exist the way you think it does, people are going to get upset with me because they're going to say, are you saying so-and-so didn't get beheaded? But what I'm saying is so-and-so wouldn't have gotten beheaded had America and Saudi Arabia and the CIA and Special Forces and Mossad hadn't trained these people. And then mysteriously, this is the worst part, this mystery of ISIS. Here, all these guys are dressed in black. Black baklavas. They're wearing black sweatshirts and combat gear.
Yeah.
Black
covering their faces.
Pants.
Yeah.
And then bright, white, shiny, clean tennis shoes. I looked at that and I said, you know, this looks like they're pitching this group at America to fear. This is what America would fear. If you wanted to paint a false picture of an enemy, put them all in black with black face masks on. You know, the only thing missing
holding up a knife or something.
Yeah, but the clothing, okay? Think about this. This is guerrilla warfare. That's what terrorism is. It's guerrilla warfare. It's insurgency warfare. Who would dress in all black, driving in a row in all the same make and model of Toyotas, 100 vehicles driving down the freeway? I can sit back 1,000 meters with a 308 and start picking them off with headshots.
Well, I know. That's what I mean. I mean, they say they're coming toward Baghdad. They're in the desert with their vehicles. They're the easiest prey. Just take them all out.
Exactly. But obviously, there's more. For instance, the bombing that took place in Syria, I followed it very closely. The first phase of the bombing of ISIS in Syria just happened to coincidentally take out Assad's refineries. Assad's refineries.
Yeah.
Not ISIS. Assad, the one we weren't allowed to take out 3 years ago when the Russians said don't do it or we'll bomb Saudi Arabia. The UN said, no, you're not authorized. The whole world was up against the West going after Assad of Syria. And all of a sudden now we've got a whole new way to bomb Syria into the Stone Age, and it's called, out of the blue, ISIS. Now here's the worst part. There are groups on the ground. They're groups on the ground from Great Britain, Denmark, different groups. They usually get published in defense journals or Soldier of Fortune magazine. That's where the reporters end up reporting the news. They went and they've looked at the weapons that ISIS has been used, like the ones the Kurds captured.
Yeah, what are they using?
American weapons.
Where'd they get them?
That's the problem. See, if George Patton was alive today, do you think George Patton would allow American arms caches to be left behind?
No.
As American troops leave a functioning war area?
He'd blow them up or something.
Blow them up. We would not leave arms caches behind so a bunch of a group of Looney Tunes that we want to field to attack Assad of Syria can cross over into Iraq, go to those arms caches, arm themselves to try to take out the Kurds. Who's creating this mobilizing myth? Who's creating this enemy for the American people and the Western people to allow a perpetual war to go on from Morocco to the Sudan, Libya, all the way to Afghanistan and possibly to the South China Sea?
Craig, this is a missile maker's dream.
Well, that's one of the things I published, is there's been a real big defunding of the defense contractors under Obama for the last 5 years. They're hurting for money.
Or they're going to get it now.
Well, they're going to get it now. That is the conclusion I'm not drawing. That's the conclusion defense journals are drawing. ISIS is a boon. That's the title of one of the articles in a defense journal. ISIS is a boon to the missile maker.
In terms of the butchery, is that made up? I mean, no doubt they've been beheading people. What's going on there? Of course, here's something interesting. A expert, he's a professor here in California, he's Iranian. Saudi Arabia, in the last 2 months, Saudi Arabia, as a government, has beheaded 19 people already.
They're averaging two a week right now. Saudi Arabia beheads two people a week. Now, they're the landmark country of beheading. But, of course, we have a special – Obama and Bush and Bush and Clinton and Bush before Clinton all said we have a special relationship with Saudi Arabia. They keep telling me about the special relationship we have with Saudi Arabia.
It's the oil spigot.
Well, somebody needs to step up and, I think, really accelerate. And I know there's people trying. I know there's genuine effort trying. But the 28 pages needs to be released to the American people that prove that Saudi Arabia was behind 9/11. Saudi Arabia is behind ISIS. Saudi Arabia is behind the Chechens in Russia. Saudi Arabia is behind too much. Saudi Arabia needs to be taken out. Not Syria, not Iraq, not ISIS, the Saudi royal family.
Well, are they playing both sides?
They're playing all sides. And they play dirty. It's not a coincidence that there's 5,000 admitted Chechens now claiming to be fighting for ISIS. It was Prince Bandar that went to Putin and said, if you don't back attacking Syria and removing Assad, I control the Chechens. We will destroy Russia. And Putin said, get out of my sight or I will nuke Saudi Arabia. That's what stopped the invasion in Syria, was Putin's response to Prince Bandar.
And you probably would have done that.
I think we've pushed Putin as far as he's going to be pushed.
I want to get your take, Craig, on Hong Kong, where thousands of people are fed up. They want independence. What's happening there?
Well, it's a kind of a long story, but yeah, if we're going to a break.
Not yet. We've got about 6 minutes.
Okay. Well, Hong Kong has been a linchpin to Western capitalism and something of a spear point pointing at China for a long time. China and Russia, India, South Africa, Brazil. And there's an underlying current right now that Germany might now join BRICS. These are all indicators that some of the most powerful nations that aren't necessarily friendly to the United States have been pushed far enough. And I think we're doing the pushing. You know, I care a great deal about my country. I think I'm fundamentally can be described as a patriot. But I think it is our government. A rogue government, a government that doesn't represent the American people. And I think we're pushing the world to the brink of a conventional war. Maybe not World War III, but, you know, does it really have to be World War III to destroy the economy of America?
Heck no.
No.
Heck
no. We're not making it now. And the people of Hong Kong have had it. They're tired of being under the foot of China. They're tired of being under the foot of a corrupt regime in Hong Kong. Nobody likes the distance between Japan and China and what's going on in the South Sea in those regions. And China isn't fooling around. They're putting more money into defense and their navy. They're putting twice as much into their defense and navy alone.
And they're getting chummy with Russia again.
And they're clearly in bed with Russia. In fact, they're disreferred to the senior diplomat to Putin, his name is Mr. Wan.
Have you ever seen a time period where everything seemed to be in a state of flux? It's just what's up is down, what's down is up, Craig.
No, I think we are facing, over the next decade, a fundamental paradigmatic shift. This is a paradigm shift that began, I think, 50 years ago. But because it was moving so slowly, we're not feeling it the way we're feeling it today because technology is driving it so much faster that I don't even believe Washington can control it anymore.
No, they probably can't. They're going through the motions like they can, but I think it's out of control.
It is out of control, and it is moving fast. I know it's moving fast because I'm putting out 7 PDF files a week when I used to put out 2.
Wow. What's fueling that?
Money. I think the world is drunk on fiat currency.
Yeah, I think they are too. And that's going to backfire.
Well, it's going to create more bubbles here in America, more falsehoods, more housing crashes, more suffering, loss, and more unemployment, more people on welfare. I think the inner infrastructure of America is going to very quietly disappear. You know, 25 years ago, I feared that America would start looking like a third world country. Parts of America already do.
Do you think the Ebola scare is something that is going to be used as a diversion for something?
Yes, I think it already is being used as a diversion. It certainly got ISIS off the front page.
Sure did, fast.
The overwhelming amount of press in the world press that ISIS is a fake terror threat used to justify bombing in Syria and Iraq. It's being used to justify the deployment of U.S. troops again in Kuwait, Iraq, Syria. So it's being justified, a false threat called ISIS being used to reestablish the Pentagon foothold, footprint in these regions when there was no reason, no legitimate reason to do so. But the American people are far more afraid of Ebola than ISIS.
Well, and if that's the case, Craig, my take on this is because President Obama pulled the troops out. Now, we still got 20,000 plus in Afghanistan, but pulled the troops out of Iraq.
We're never going to leave Afghanistan.
Then somebody above him has got this ISIS thing going.
I think the CIA, Mossad, Saudi Arabia, I think ISIS was created to be used as a vehicle at will to be used in Iraq, Libya, throughout the entire region of the Middle East. They are never going to give up the Middle East, but the real rub is you're going to end up facing Putin.
That and Netanyahu continues to say Iran will not get nukes.
And Russia just said, yes, they will.
So to me, this sounds like the brink of a third world war.
Yeah, but not a nuclear war. Again, to be honest with you, I'm not being silly or cynical here, but, you know, if there was a few nukes launched, maybe people would grow up. But that's not going to happen. Mutual assured destruction still stands. That's not going to happen. But I don't think the American people have any concept what a full-blown conventional war on three continents would look like. America's never been at war.
Not like this.
Not like this. We've never, this country, as a nation state, has never really been at war.
Now, when we were in Europe, when we were in that command, it really never hit home.
No.
And I'm not saying the soldiers were gone and that tragedy of all that. I'm talking about the physical attack on the United States.
We've never been occupied. We don't know what war looks like. That's why it's so easy for Americans to wave flags and cheer in sports bars that American troops kick butt in some little primitive country. Do you realize we're beating up countries that don't have air forces? They don't have a navy. ISIS isn't going to come to Arizona. Nothing like that's going on. But Americans live in the lap of luxury. Even the poorest of Americans live in luxury. So we have the luxury to fear things that'll probably never come about.
Are you concerned at all about the borders, Craig?
No, I'm actually not concerned about the borders because I understand why our government is allowing the borders to be open.
What do they want?
They want more immigrants coming into America. We want to put them in the United States military, the Marines, the Army. They want them to be falsely told that they'll gain citizenship after they serve 6 or 8 years in the military. We're putting new programs together under Obama to actively pursue illegal immigrants and offer them positions in the military, and we've been recruiting them for the military for a very long time. The other aspect is the American people aren't working any longer. There's a lot of reasons for unemployment, but the fact of the matter is this. There's no taxes being paid to pay for Social Security and pensions.
Good point. Craig, we're going to come back. Final hour to go with you as we will take phone calls for the full hour right here on Coast to Coast AM.